This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 19.
Hello, welcome to Marathon Training Academy, found online at marathontrainingacademy.com. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we interview Bart Yasso, Chief Running Officer at Runner's World Magazine and author of the book, My Life on the Run. And in this episode's quick tip, Angie shares a few pointers on getting quality sleep. So we are back in Wyoming after being in the car for 2 days. I was ready to get out and run and not go anywhere, not drive anywhere. We had a very small window of time to get this interview with Bart done before we left, and so our schedules finally worked out where we could do this in the morning. Of course, he's an hour different than us, so we got the kids over to Grandma's so that we could be free for the call, and got on Skype and started chatting with Mr. Yasso, and then our recording system failed. And it happened twice, so it was a little bit nerve-wracking for me anyway. Was it nerve-wracking for you?
Yeah, I was thinking, oh, he's going to get impatient with us and, you know, we're going to have to call off the whole interview. But
yeah,
he was very gracious and let us work through the bugs in the system. Not that I knew anything about working through the bugs, but Trevor had to deal with the technology part of it. And yeah, it was just a real honor to be able to talk with him and a very enjoyable interview that I think everyone's really going to get a lot out of.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because, you know, I've read a lot of books, but how many times you get to interview the author after you read a book? And it was a lot easier than I thought, you know, just to get in contact with him, and he agreed to come on the show and was happy to do it. So I think all of you are really going to enjoy this interview and the questions that we ask. And since the interview is long, we're not going to talk too much here in the beginning, but Angie wants to give a few shout-outs. There's some of you out there that are just really making some awesome progress, and we'd like to say a word about that.
Yeah, the first one is from Steve, and he lives in South Korea. He says, "Hi, Angie. It's really nice to hear from a real person. I appreciate what you and your husband are doing. I'm 56, an American teaching in Seoul, South Korea. I've run off and on, mostly off, years and years without running since I was in high school, in the first running boom in the late 60s. I've been running fairly regularly since 99, but only in 5Ks. Believe it or not, I promised myself 40 years ago that one day I'd run a marathon. Then a few months ago, I bumped into a Korean guy, older than I, when we were both out running, and he asked me in his limited English if I ran marathons. I had to say no, and it reminded me of my promise. And so I'm training for a marathon here in Seoul on November 7th. I'm using Jeff Galloway's run-walk method, and I'm looking for all the help and encouragement I can get. Thanks again. I look forward to your podcast." That's from Steve. So that's exciting. It's never too late to make good on the promises that you've made for yourself, to fulfill those goals and dreams that you've had. And I really liked what he had to say there.
Yeah, it's good.
The second one comes from Alyssa, and she says, "Thank you so much for the warm welcome. I'm training for the Women's Running Half Marathon in St. Petersburg in November. It'll be my very first one. I don't have time goals other than finishing. I just stumbled onto your podcast on iTunes, and I love them. Your tips have been very helpful and encouraging, especially when you talk about someone's belief in whether they can or can't run a marathon. I love my friends, but they aren't exactly the most supportive of my ambition to run. I remember posting something on Facebook about being excited to get off the treadmill and start running outside, and the suggestions were that I should really just walk instead or lose weight first and then try to run. That's when I decided that I needed to find communities where I can get support and encouragement from other people who enjoy running. I look forward to hearing more as I continue to train and complete my first half marathon."
Yeah, so it is important who you surround yourself with, because there are some friends that are going to encourage you in your health and fitness goals, but some are not going to understand.
Exactly. And so the important thing is to reach out to people who do understand and are going to encourage you and support you along the way. The third one I wanted to share was from Jeremy. He says, "Hi, Angie. Thanks for the support. I love the podcasts and have started to listen to them exclusively when I run. What you and Trevor are doing is wonderful because it's always great to have a support network outside of your family and friends. My body and nutrition revolution came when I realized I couldn't beat my brother in tennis anymore. I said to myself that in 2010 would be the year to start from scratch, get healthy, and be an athlete again. In college, I had ballooned to a staggering 255 pounds. I ate within the aisles of the grocery store, drank alcohol excessively, and consumed way too much fast food. Thanks to some research online, cooking at home, dedication, and many other motivating factors, I am now down to 205 pounds for the first time since I was 14 years old. My goal is to live and love life in the 190 to 200 weight range for the rest of my life. I still have some work to do, and my Honolulu marathon training is helping me get there. I did a half marathon in May, and I'm now addicted to running, working out, and being active. I encourage everyone to find some sort of motivating factor to revolutionize their exercise efforts and to be active like myself. Every human has it in them to be healthy, exercise regularly, and accomplish what might seem impossible. Thanks for everything. That's from Jeremy. And really, he says it exactly right. You know, every human has the potential to eat healthy, to exercise regularly, and, you know, to make the most of themselves.
Yeah, sounds like he's really changing his life. Now, where he said that he ate within the aisles of the grocery store, is that, I can picture he's like so hungry that he's just standing in the aisles, tearing stuff open and eating, or what does he mean?
No, he basically means that he ate mostly processed foods, you know, things like...
Stuff that you find in the center of the grocery store.
Exactly, packaged foods, as opposed to the outside or the perimeter of the grocery store, which usually has your fruits and your vegetables, your dairy, your meats, things like that, so... He's just trying to make some health changes there, and it is possible. So we're excited about the progress he's making. And just like to say, keep going with it, Jeremy, and you'll be running that marathon before you know it.
Definitely. All right, well, we're going to jump right into our interview here today with Bart Yasso. And then after the interview, we'll have a quick tip.
Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way.
Well, all right. We are honored today to have Bart Yasso on our podcast. He's the chief running officer at Runner's World Magazine and the author of the book My Life on the Run, which Angie and I have both read recently. He's completed more than 1,000 races in his running career, including marathons on all seven continents, the Ironman Triathlon, and the Badwater 146 through Death Valley. He's also cycled unsupported by himself across the United States twice. In 2007, he was inducted into the Running USA Hall of Champions in recognition of his contribution, impact, and dedication to the sport. So, Bart, you the man.
Yeah, I don't know about if I'm the man. I feel I've been very lucky and blessed to just get into the sport of running 33 years ago. And since then, it's just it's taken me literally all over the world and opened up so many doors for me. I just feel very lucky, to be honest.
For those who haven't read your book, My Life on the Run, what factors got you started on your running journey?
I wasn't planning on getting hooked in the sport of running. I just wanted to get in shape. And, you know, once I just did that first run, I just got hooked right away. And then, of course, 1 mile leads to 3 mile runs, to 5 mile runs, to a marathon, and then just went on and on and on. But I was very lucky to just head out the door and go for that first run and get hooked on this great sport.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's not, a lot of people think that I, you know, was a great high school runner and collegiate runner, and that's not the case.
The neat thing about the sport is that you can start at any time and it still has the potential to change your life.
Yeah, I meet many runners that get into the sport in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, and they always say, oh, I wish I would have done this when I was younger. But I always tell them, you know, it's never too late. You're in it now. You're going to be a great runner. You can improve your running for 7 to 8 years, no matter what age you start. So, you know, I'm kind of jealous of those people that start late in life, because they are just so anxious to do this stuff. And, you know, of course, older in your life, you have more perspective of what's really important to you. And some of these people really get into it and, you know, travel all over the world and run marathons. So, yeah, it's never too late.
Awesome. Well, I have the next question, and that would be, what is your top training tip for someone who wants to run a marathon or half marathon?
Sure. If you're starting from ground zero and just getting into it, maybe accomplished a 5K or just running, 3 or 4 miles as your long run during the week, mm-hmm. you can do a half marathon or marathon. What I suggest is increasing your runs to get up to the distance. If you're trying a half marathon, you have to get a run up in training up to about 8 to 10 miles. And the best thing to do is take walk breaks and those longer runs. And the way to do that is, you know, run 10 minutes, take a one-minute walk break, and then run 10 minutes again. And that way you can cover more distance. Your body will get used to covering more distance, and then you could conquer that half marathon. And if you want to step up to the marathon, you need to do those, that get that long run up to 20 miles. Mm-hmm. And same thing, you can use those walk breaks to get you there if you're new to this. If you're already an accomplished runner on the shorter distance and want to move up to the half marathon and marathon, it's just increasing that mileage and, you know, just getting used to being on your feet for that period of time. And then the half marathon and marathons will be, you know, a blessing for you. I think a lot of people are intimidated by the distance until they try it. And then they realize how much fun this distance running, endurance racing really is. But it's all about starting slowly. Don't get too carried away on more is not better in running. You really have to let your body adapt as you increase the mileage and increase the distance of these long runs.
That's great. I'm glad to hear you say that I can walk some.
Yeah, I take walk breaks in my runs. And, you know, it's just, you know, I would have never thought of that when I started running, but Jeff Galloway started this walk break thing years ago, and it's really popular, and it really helps out a lot of people that are new to the sport.
That's great. I've read that you're a vegetarian. What led you to make those that dietary lifestyle choice, and what is your eating philosophy, and how do you think that it benefits your running?
Hey, Angie, you are correct. I'm a vegetarian. I love being a vegetarian. I started it years ago. I started it more from an ethical and environmental reason, not okay. so much a health reason. And, you know, I just fell in love with, once I became a vegetarian, I found that the food I eat now I like better than when I was eating meat and chicken and fish. So
right.
for me, it truly was this, like, you know, you get away from all the meat and fish and chicken that I used to eat. And then I just love to eat the fruits, salads, breads, nuts, and I just feel better. And, you know, from an ethical environmental standpoint, it just is a good feeling for me to live lower on this food chain and try to help the world out. The whole the statement that really strikes me is, you know, you got to produce 30 pounds of grain to produce 1 pound of beef. Mm. Is what I always read. So I'm eating the grains instead of the beef. And you know, it's just one of those things. I just love living the lifestyle. I don't miss the meat or anything at all. And I just love the foods I eat now.
That's neat. You can appreciate it so much more, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, it's easier to eat an organic style when you're concentrating
right.
on fruit and veggies. And, you know, I try to eat as much organic food as possible.
Good, good. And I think it seems like once a person starts taking better care of their body, they want to fuel it with, you know, the healthier type foods too.
Sure. And then on the health side of it, I feel this, the vegetarian lifestyle is healthy. But again, that was, you know, came down the road. It was really driven ethical and environmental. But
right.
yeah, I just feel better eating a vegetarian lifestyle.
Well, I think that's wonderful.
So what would you eat before a long run?
Just some fruit, maybe some like a half a bagel with some peanut butter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something really basic, an energy bar. I eat a lot of Clif Bars these days. I'm hooked on those Clif Bars.
Oh, I love Clif Bars.
But I was also a Power Bar guy for many years and still eat some Power Bars. So, you know, I just love those energy bars. They're convenient to give you that energy, and they're easy to eat before heading out for a run.
I bet if you invented the Yasso bar, it'd be popular.
There you go. I like that. I like that, Trevor. I got a workout named after me. That's enough. I don't want any any food named after me.
All right. Well, I got the next question.
Go ahead, Trevor.
You're probably best known as the chief running officer at Runner's World magazine. And I've heard you say that you've got the greatest job in the world for a runner. So tell us, what is the best thing about your job?
Sure. I say that on my website. I said that in my book that I do have the greatest job in the world. And I hope other people feel that their job is the greatest job in the world, because that is the greatest scenario. If we all go to work and feel we have the greatest job, that would be the perfect world for everybody.
Yeah.
Having said that, I definitely have the coolest title. Chief
sure.
Running Officer absolutely is the coolest title of any job. I will say that. But, you know, when people ask me why my job is so great, it has nothing to do with my physical office at Runner's World. It is truly about the people I get to meet on a weekly basis. I go to a run almost every weekend. I'm home about 3 or 4 weekends out of the year.
Wow.
The other 48 weekends or 49 weekends, I'm on the road at an event. And, you know, I'm at these finish lines greeting people as they just finished their marathon, half marathon, 10K, 5K, whatever race distance it is. And I just get to hear so many inspiring stories, so much people have overcome just to get to the starting line of these events.
Mm-hmm.
So the finish line is truly their celebration. And I just get to be part of these stories because I get to hear, you know, what they've overcome to get there. And, you know, it's just exciting for me. And then the company that owns Runner's World is our company is called Rodale,
mm-hmm.
and it's a family-owned business. It's the largest independent publishing company in America, and they're just such a great family. They're very philanthropic, so I just get fired up to come in my office every day. I don't need coffee or anything in the morning. I come in here. I am ready to go. I'm just fired up every day I get to my office, and a lot of days my office is on the road, and it's the same way on the road. I just love what I do. I love the company I work for. I love our mission statement, and you know, and then get to meet these great people. There's something about this sport of running. It's hard to explain it. You got to be immersed in it. But
yeah.
The thing I hear all the time, or someone new to the sport, and they go to a race for the first time, or they run with a running group for the first time, and they say, are all runners like this? You know, because I can't believe how friendly people are and how open people are and how helpful people are. And I say, yeah, I think it's this culture that runners created, that we are all this friendly and helpful and it's, you know, and very compassionate. And most people think it's just this competitive side of the sport, where there is a competitive side to it. But I experience more of the compassionate side to running more than the competitive side. In my younger days, it was more of the competition. The past 20 years, I see more of the compassion of the sport of running.
Right. And I like what you said in your book, that running is not a spectator sport, but everyone's a participant. And, you know, it's very inclusive, that, you know, you don't
yep.
care what the person next to you, what their background is like. It all brings you together into this enjoyment, this great lifestyle.
Yeah, I always say that. You have no clue if you're running next to a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, or if a guy next to you literally, you know, doesn't have a whole lot of money and leads a meager lifestyle. You just don't know. We're all just in running clothes with you know, a pair of running shoes on, and we're out there covering the distance, and you just kind of blend in and help each other out. And it is very inclusive. The sport of running really takes in anybody. You just have to be willing to do it. And perfect example are the, you know, we accept wheelchair racing and, you know, into running, and also hand cranks. I mean, you go to these big races, you know, if you go to New York City Marathon and watch the people that start at 4 a.m. where they send off the Achilles athletes that have MS or cerebral palsy, and they get to start at 4 a.m. because it's going to take them so long to cover the course.
Mm-hmm.
And the race wants them to finish when the crowds are still there. How many blind runners we have. I mean, I could just go on and on, the runners of disability that are included in our sport. And very few sports do this. And it's what fires me up about this sport. That word inclusion is what I love. And that's the number one word that I would describe running. You know, if someone were to ask me to describe running in one word, I would use the word inclusion.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Well said.
Now, turn corner a little bit here. You contracted Lyme disease in, I believe, 1997, and have suffered some joint damage and things from that. What has that 13-year journey been like?
Yeah, I actually contracted Lyme disease twice. I got it back in 1991 when I was in – I did a race in Connecticut, which was the hotbed for Lyme disease.
Yes.
Then I contracted it again in 97. And
wow.
It's done a lot of damage to not only the joints, but I have a lot of paralysis in my face and the right side of my body, and it has done some joint damage. But, you know, it's one of those things – you know, obviously I didn't want to contract the disease, but for me, I just, you know, it's really put a hold on my running career, slowed me down tremendously. But, you know, it's one of those things. I was so lucky to be able to have a running career where I didn't have any injuries. I know a lot of people have, you know, end up with a lot of running injuries, and I was not one of those people. I felt very lucky. I must have just had that body that could endure.
Yes.
And so, you know, Lyme disease got me, but it's one of those things, I just live with it. I try not to use it as an excuse for everything. I just kind of deal with it and listen to my body. I just really have to pay attention to what I can do and cannot do with running. And unfortunately, I can't run a whole lot. I probably, well, I know for a fact, I only did about 25 runs, training runs, prior to Comrades. And I did those with, you know, in about the 5 months leading up to Comrades. So instead of, I know most people probably ran 25 runs each month leading up to Comrades, and I only did about 25 runs in a 5 month period, because that's all my body would allow me to do. So to me, I mean, you know, it's just figuring out how my body reacts to the exercise I do and then adjusting to it. But I feel I have to exercise. I feel if I don't, I'm even worse off. Like my joints swell up a lot, and I get a lot of edema in my legs. It's a bizarre disease, and I think they still don't know everything about Lyme disease. I think they're learning as we go along. I've been treated many different ways, and you know, still a lot of mystery out there. But I can tell you, it does a lot of damage to your joints, and that's one of the big side effects of Lyme disease.
Wow, I like though how you focus on not your limitations, but the things that you can do. And we have a lady in our audience named Angela who has Lyme disease, and at one point she couldn't get out of bed by herself, but now she's training to run the New York City Marathon and raise money for awareness of Lyme's disease and long-term treatment of it. And so it's just, you know, when I saw in your book that you had, you know, had some of the same experience, it was really neat. I'm sure a lot of people feel like they can relate to you because so many people have overcome so many limitations, like you said, to get to the starting line of a race and, you know, then to go to the finish line. So,
yeah, I get so many emails from people suffering from chronic Lyme disease, stages of Lyme disease. And I hear that all the time, and people cannot get out of bed. They struggle walking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the people that really know how much I struggle are my colleagues at Runner's World, because they see me in the office, and, of course, my wife, Laura.
Yes.
And I struggle many days that, you know, I struggle to walk down the hall some days. So it kind of seems weird to struggle to walk down the hall. Why would I go out and run?
Right.
So I don't go out and run. Those days I try to ride my bike or do an elliptical or try to go for a swim, do something that's easier on my body. But then those days where my body feels all right, those are the days I try to go out and run a couple miles and see what happens. But those days, unfortunately, are far and few between. But, yeah, I just listen to my body. But I get fired up at those people that are beating this disease and getting out there and trying to do, the, you know, like you said, run the New York City Marathon. I get inspired by those people.
Yes, that's really inspires me too. And I'm sure that many doctors, you know, have told you that your running career is over. What do you say to people who've been told by, you know, others, maybe their doctor, that, you know, their running goal is impossible?
Yeah, you know, first of all, I respect all doctors because I think it's, you know, it's a great profession, and I know they're out there to help people. So
yes,
my doctors did tell me not to run, you know, when they look at the MRIs of my joints, specifically my right knee and right hip. You know, I respect what they say, and so I cut way back on my running, as I said, and then I try to do some cross training. But sometimes you got to listen to your own body. I mean, I had this goal that I had to do Comrades, and even though the doctors told me not to run, I was convinced that I could do it, and so, you know, I didn't want to end my running career without doing it. So kind of went against the doctor's orders and did it. But I'm one of those believers, you know, take all the info the docs give you and then kind of figure out what makes the most sense to you and adjust to what you can do. You know, because there's no guarantees in life. There's no guarantee that I'll live to be 100 years old. And, you know,
exactly.
even tomorrow's not guaranteed. So you got to put things into perspective and kind of prioritize and what's important to you. And but, you know, I love my doctors and really listen to them. But, yeah, sometimes you got to figure out what's most important to you.
Right.
And doctors tend to be on the conservative side, and they should be on the conservative side,
because mm-hmm.
they're looking at long term effects. So,
exactly,
I have great admiration for the profession and what they're how they're helping people.
After all the finishing lines you've crossed over the years, how has this experience changed for you?
You know, it's an interesting question. I love that, the finish line, because that is the that's where the clock is. That's where they record your time. That's kind of how you end up in results. It's kind of the celebration, so to speak, as you get to the finish line. For me, things have changed tremendously, because now my goal at Comrades was just to get to the starting line.
Right.
In the old days, it was to me, it was all the finish line. It was, okay, I trained, you know, 4 months for the Boston Marathon or the New York City Marathon or a 50-mile race or the Badwater 146-mile race. And you always thought about your time at the finish line and your place, you know, could I be in the top 10 or whatever your goal was for that event. My training and my mindset have changed tremendously, because now to me it's just getting to the starting line, and then hopefully I get to the finish line. And you know, I don't set any of these crazy goals anymore. It's really just, it's kind of what I say, the honor to start these races and then the honor to cross the finish line at these great events. And you know, I'm just like being out there mixing it up with the people. I did 10 marathons leading up to Comrades. So when I said I only did about 25 runs, I really concentrated on those long runs.
Yes.
And when I was doing those marathons, I was running them about an hour and a half to 2 hours slower than I used to run marathons in my younger days. And so I was around so many more people, and I'll tell you, it was the greatest experience, because, you know, it was more social and just so much more fun talking to people as you're running along and getting to hear their stories. I mean, people would just come up next to me and go, "Hey, you're Barriasso," and then they would just start right in how they got into running, and it's amazing to me, like just total strangers, and I absolutely loved it, you know, and then the miles would just fly by.
And, that's wonderful.
It's an incredible experience. You know, when I did the San Francisco Marathon, and I had this guy come up next to me, and he heard my talk the day before the race. And he asked if he could run alongside of me, and I said, sure. So we started running together, and I asked him the question, how he got into marathon running, and he just went off, and his story was so amazing, it took 14 miles to tell it. By the time that was over, we were at the finish line, because I ran into him around the 12-mile mark.
Wow.
And the last 14 miles of race were like they never didn't even exist. I was just so amazed at this guy's story. Alexis Garcia is a guy. He was a Cuban guy that kayaked out of Cuba.
Oh my!
Wow.
67 hours in a kayak. He really didn't know how to swim. I mean, his story was just amazing to me. How he was able to get out of Cuba, get into the United States, and then become a U.S. citizen and become a runner. And he's very active in the running community in Miami. And I'm telling you, when
wow.
he stopped running, we realized that, you know, we only had less than a half mile to go. And Alexis's story changed me forever. I was just amazed. And then I just said, okay, this is the place for me. I love running, you know, around 4.5 hours and talking to these people and finding these great stories within the race.
Yeah, I'd like to run with that guy someday.
Yeah, Alexis Garcia, I'm telling you, he will just tell you this story about kayaking out of Cuba and, you know, they were going the wrong way. I mean, everything is amazing how he ended up in the United States. And then, and of course, then he becomes a marathon runner.
Out of curiosity, back when you were focused more on finishing, maybe like in the top 10 or something, what was your fastest marathon time that you posted?
My fastest time, Boston Marathon, back in 1983, I ran 2 hours and 40 minutes and a few seconds. I don't remember what the seconds, but just 2 hours and 40 minutes and a few seconds.
Oh, that's booking it.
Yes.
Yeah, just a little over 6 minute pace, I guess, like 6:06 per mile, something like that.
You must have found a shortcut on that race or something.
Yeah, that was but you know, back then that's marathon. I mean, you had to run a 2:50 to get into the Boston Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
So 2:40 was not that fast a time in the Boston Marathon. I mean, it was a different lifestyle back in the early 80s. Everyone was pretty fast, and we did a lot of high mileage, and you know, things have changed, and I love the changes today, but that's the way it was back when I got into it.
Cool. Well, I've got the final question, and that is,
yeah,
how much of the marathon experience do you think is mental?
Oh man. Yeah, they always say, is it half mental or you know half physical? I gotta say, in the marathon distance, I believe the last 10K is where it's really mental. But I think it also takes a smart mind to start out correctly in the marathon. I see so many people that start the marathon too quickly and then they fade in the last 10K. And I think you have to be really focused and use your mind to start out correctly and slow down early on or run a pace that you can hold for the entire 26.2 miles. And then you get middle part of the race, you're just focused and staying in the flow. And then I believe that last 10K is just, it's mind over matter. You just got to tell yourself how good you feel and how much you trained and how strong you are and just kind of overcome or actually do what you didn't think was possible. I think so many of us limit ourselves because we tell ourselves, well, I can only run this fast, or I'm only good enough to go this fast. And that's not the way to do it. You really have to set a goal. It should be realistic. I mean, you can't say I'm going to run a 2:05 marathon or something like that, but
right.
But set a realistic goal and put yourself out there. Just go a little bit more than what you think you can do, and then try to mentally focus on that. And, you know, a lot of the mental preparation for a marathon should be done prior to the race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you should envision yourself crossing that finish line at that time and, you know, what it's like to go back to work after you've run this specific time. Or, you know, you really got to set these goals and really mentally think about them. And then during that race, when those legs really get tired and fatigued and you get to that, you know, last 10K, that's where it's really, you got to keep the mind focused, keep those positive thoughts going, and those legs will keep turning over.
Yeah.
But I believe it's that last 10K is where the mental part wins out. You got to just, and you got to be ahead of the game and be prepared for it.
Right. I definitely agree from, you know, just a little bit of personal experience. And I think that pushing yourself beyond what you thought your limits were, it just carries over into the rest of your life. And you realize that, you know, you can accomplish so much more and set higher goals for yourself in every, you know, area of life too.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. I got an email from a friend yesterday. Just yesterday, this email came in and said, this runner, she ran her first 12-hour race, and she did a run with me in Danvers, Massachusetts back in May. And when I was running with her, she told me she was doing her first 12-hour race, which was in August. And
wow.
She said, I think I can – my ultimate goal would be to do 50 miles. And apparently I looked over at her and said, you can run more than 50 miles. And she said, I told her she would run 54 miles. I just met this woman, you know, but for some reason, when she said 50 miles, I looked at her and figured, you know, she said she's only can do 50. That's what she's going to do. So
right.
I set the bar a little higher and said, I think you can do 54 miles. Well, she sent me an email yesterday and she said she completed the race and she ran 54.77 miles.
Wow.
So so maybe I should take up predicting some of these times for people. But you know, I think she did that because that was in her mind. And I told her she could run 54 miles, and she was probably out there with that 54 in her head that she could do that, and she ended up running 54 miles in 12 hours, which is a pretty impressive at her
yes.
first attempt at running this 12-hour race, where, you know, there's these 12-hour races and 24-hour races that you just run as much as you can in that time slot.
Right.
And that's how you place. It's kind of a neat way to do a race. So I was happy to see that. And I think if we wouldn't have done that run together, I bet she would have run 50 miles, because that's what she told herself she could do, and her mind was probably convinced that,
yeah.
you know, just get to 50 miles and, you know, that's a good deal. So you always got to think of a little bit more than what you think is possible, because we can all go a little bit faster and further than we think we're capable of doing.
Well, that's a good illustration of the power of the mind. She probably thought, well, if Bart Yasso thinks I can go 54, I'm going to go 54.
Yeah. I thought that, I don't know about if I had anything to do with it, but I was pretty excited when I got that email. And when I talked about the beauty of my job, I received an email the other day from a young guy who read the chapter in my book where I cycled across the country twice, and he just thought that was the coolest thing, and he just sent me an email that he just finished cycling across the country and just finished up. He went from somewhere in Virginia to San Francisco, and he said, you know, reading my book was that planted the seed, and he wanted to do this. He just graduated from college and realized this is the time to do it before he gets a real job and doesn't have
yes.
the time to do it. And, you know, I get emails like that all the time. I do this PowerPoint talk I do at events called Never Limit Where Running Could Take You. Mm. And when I say Never Limit Where Running Could Take You, I mean that physically, emotionally, spiritually, whatever it takes. And, you know, there's always non-runners in the crowd when I do this. And I got an email just yesterday from a woman who wasn't a runner, but she said, I wanted to be a runner when she heard my talk. And, you know, her husband's been doing marathons all these years, and, you know, it just didn't dawn on her that she should be a runner. And something about the way I presented it just got her all excited, and she sent me this email that she's running at her first half marathon, and now she considers herself a runner. And yeah, that stuff just fires me up when I get emails like that.
That just makes it all worthwhile, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, it's I tell my story, it's not about me. I just tell a story how running has taken, how it's changed my life and created my job, and literally has taken me all over the world. And I want that to happen to other people. So I tell my story because I know my story best, but it's not about me. It's truly about the power of the sport of running and what it can do for so many people. And when I get these emails, that's what gets me excited. That it's my motivation to stay out there and travel 200 days a year, because it's arduous to do what I do. But when I receive these emails, it's all worthwhile.
Well, that's well said. Well, we've been talking to Bart Yasso, author of the book My Life on the Run, The Wit, Wisdom, and Insights of a Road Racing Icon. Bart, thank you for letting us interview you. It's been a lot of fun.
Hey, no problem, Trevor and Angie. Thank you, guys. And keep
thank
up
you.
The great work with the Marathon Training Academy podcast. I love it.
Thank you.
We're so fortunate to do what we do, to be involved in this great sport, and we're doing it at the right time because the sport just keeps growing in leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
So we're riding the wave and enjoying every second of it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so that concludes our interview with Bart Yasso, and if you'd like to find him online, you can go to bartyasso.com, and we'll have a link to his site in the show notes over at marathontrainingacademy.com. You know, Angie, that was a lot of fun talking to him. I like the mental motivation that he touched on there about the power of the mind and just thinking you can do more than you can. And I'm kind of facing that now as I'm building up my miles to run my half marathon, because not only do I need to keep pushing my body, but also pushing the limits of my mind. And I've heard you talk a lot about the mental motivation necessary to run a marathon. So I really was happy to hear him touch on some of those things.
Yeah, it is really amazing that the mind even may be more important than the body.
Mm-hmm.
The mind is what gets you out the door in the first place and can push your body to do what it needs to do to build up your running base or train for a marathon, whatever your goals are. And I think on the last podcast, we mentioned that we're working on a membership option for Marathon Training Academy for those who want to take their running to the next level. And the whole first module is going to be about unlocking your mental motivation to live healthier and run further because of the importance of the mind. That's really the basis. That's the foundation that you need to build upon so that when things get tough, that you don't give up and quit.
Yeah, so it's coming together, and it's going to be cool. And like Angie said, the whole first module's all on the power of the mind. Well, it's time for the Marathon Training Academy quick tip. And Angie's going to talk about one of her favorite things in life, sleep.
Are you mocking me? I know, it's no secret. I do love my sleep, and maybe more than some people. But, you know, we all know that sleep is important. And studies show that most adults don't get the quantity or quality of sleep that they need. Sleep experts recommend that adults get at least 7 hours of sleep each night. And for some of us busy people, that can be hard to come by sometimes. Rest and recovery becomes even more important for the runner, especially during marathon training. Hard workouts and long runs become more profitable for your body when they're paired with quality sleep habits. So here are some tips for getting the most out of your rest. The first thing would be try to go to bed and get up at approximately the same time each day. Even on the weekends, it's important to try to keep approximately the same sleep schedule. Getting your body into a healthy sleep cycle is important. The second thing, which is a big one, and it's very hard to do from personal experience, is to turn off all media sources like the TV, your computer, your smartphone, at least an hour before going to bed. You want to wind down that online, that TV stimulation, because the brain is stimulated by electronic sources and it can make it difficult to settle down and help you rest.
Oh, I've noticed that. If I shut my computer off and go straight to bed, my mind keeps going and I have trouble getting to sleep.
It's like your brain is still trying to process all that data or whatever you've been working on, or even sometimes watching a movie. It's really hard to wind down after that and go straight to bed.
Especially an action movie, because I'm still fighting in the scenes, you know.
Yeah, you might notice that you are more restless that night, or that you have, you know, strange dreams and everything. So it's important to allow yourself at least that 1 hour window where your brain is not stimulated by electronic sources. If you're still not sleepy, it's best to try reading something. Probably not something that's going to keep you up. Maybe something more low-key or even a little bit boring to help you wind down and get that sleep that you need. The third thing is, if you exercise in the evening, try to do so at least 3 hours before you plan to go to bed. Exercise can also stimulate the body and mind and make it difficult for some people to wind down. The fourth thing would be try not to eat at least 2 hours before going to bed. Your body is going to be busy with the digestion process, and it's going to make rest more difficult. And if your blood's in your stomach working on the food, it's not going to have the resources it needs to repair muscles and do other vital recovery. Along the line of the food, try to eliminate foods and drinks containing caffeine several hours before bedtime. Obviously, caffeine is a stimulant. And if you're knocking back the coffee or sodas, you know, right up until bedtime, it's going to make it very difficult for your body to unwind. The next thing would be to keep your bedroom cool and dark. Don't use your bedroom for work or watching TV. Try to keep it a restful place, kind of a sanctuary, where once you go there, you know, your body starts automatically winding down. The sixth thing would be a warm shower or bath before bed can help relax the body and cools the body temperature. And kind of along this line too, just doing some gentle stretches or yoga type moves can also help just relax the body and prepare it for getting a good night's sleep. The final thing would be, if you awaken easily at night, try using a fan or a machine that plays white noise to help decrease outside noise and reduce distractions.
All right, so Marathon Training Academy, improving your sleep and freeing your mind with every episode. And if you'd like more information on running and marathon training, please visit us at our website, marathontrainingacademy.com. And while you're there, you can ask Angie a question and download a free audio gift called The 7 Pillars of Successful Marathon Training. We wish you ultimate success in your running and fitness goals. We want you to know that you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life.
Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. Well on my way.